Hey friends, Rich Birch here from Unseminary, and I want to invite you to a live and free webinar next month that I know many of you are going to really benefit from. See, we know that hundreds of churches that are listening in today are thinking about how you increase your leadership. You're wondering, where does the next you come from? You're wondering, hey, how can I find the right leaders to really grow our church? And so what we want to do is provide you with a free and live webinar with Dave Miller from Leadership Pathway and Mitch Comstead from Rocky Mountain Christian Church. This is going to be an incredible hour of conversation all about how to take your current intern program to the next level, or how to really boost your residency to really develop the kind of leaders that you're looking for, and to help the interns or residents in your church really develop into the kind of people who ultimately will go out and make a difference in the kingdom. So we want you to join. It's free, it's live, it's for an hour. We're going to dig in with the questions that you have. It's going to be an incredible time. It's on June 20th. Again, that is leadershippathway.org/webinar. That's leadershippathway.org/webinar. All right, well, you're going to love today's interview. I'm super excited to have Caleb on. Let's go.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, happy Thursday. It's Rich from the Unseminary Podcast. Super glad that you have tuned in today, and you're going to be in for a real treat. Today we've got Caleb Kaltenbach with us. What a great leader. He's a friend in the real world. I'm so excited to have him on the podcast. If you have not tracked with him, you are missing out. And today we're going to give you just a real thin slice of why you should be tracking along with him. Caleb has been a pastor, but currently is kind of out of that. We're going to talk a little bit about that. He's an author of two amazing books and one new book coming out. One book that both of his books are amazing. But to me, his book "Messy Grace" is really a foundational reading. I think it's on my to-do list. You've got to read it. My must-read list. I mean, I've read it already. Your must-read list. It's a fantastic work for us. I think particularly as we wrestle with how do we lead in the world today. Caleb, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. It's an honor.
Oh, I'm so glad for you to be here. Why don't we start with, give us the Caleb story. So how do you, kind of talk about your world? What has brought you to today?
Yeah. So when I was 2 years old, my parents, who were both professors at the University of Missouri, Columbia in Missouri, they divorced. Both of them went into same-sex relationships. And my dad was in the closet. My mom was with her partner for 22 years. They moved to Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas. They were activists. They joined the local board of directors for GLAAD in the area at that time. They took me with them when I was young to pride parades, clubs, parties, house parties, camping trips, anything you can imagine. And it was there, especially at the pride parades, that I saw the ugliness of some who professed to be Christians. And they would hold up signs saying, "God hates you." They even sprayed water and urine on my mom and her partner and people in the parade. And I thought to myself, I never want to be a Christian, because if Christians are this bad, I can't imagine how awful Jesus is. And so by the time I got to be 16, I hated Christians. I got invited in high school by this high schooler who led a Bible study in his house to go attend this. And I thought to myself, man, this is going to be perfect. I'm going to go and be a pretend Christian, learn about their faith and dismantle it. And, you know, obviously that turned out really well.
Right, exactly.
It's a good plan. Yes. But anyway, I became a Christian. I came out to my parents as a Christian who wanted to be a pastor, who had changed his view on sexual intimacy to what I hold today, that God designed sex to be expressed in marriage between a man and a woman. And when I came out to my parents as a Christian, they kicked me out. Eventually, they let me back in. I graduated from high school, became a pastor. I was preaching in Dallas, Texas for a while. And they both moved down there separately of one another to be closer to our family. They started attending the church that I was preaching at. And the church there in Dallas actually treated them like actual human beings, not like projects. And my parents gave their lives to Jesus. And so that's my story in a nutshell.
That's amazing. Before we started recording, listeners, I was like, I'm not sure how you're going to compress your whole story down into a couple minutes. That's amazing, Caleb. It's again, in your book, Messy Grace, you pull this story apart and I think do just a commendable job in modeling for people, really walking out grace and truth. And I think I couldn't help but be, as I read it, I couldn't help but think, man, there's probably people on both ends of the spectrum that are not going to like this book. You know, if there is such a thing as a spectrum, there are going to be people that will be kind of in a good way offended and put off. And I think that's a good thing. I think to think about these issues in a different way and to wrestle through them and ask the question, you know, how is it that we can love in the world that we're in today? So has that been the experience with Messy Grace and God of Tomorrow? Has that been the experience with people out there?
Absolutely, especially with Messy Grace. Not as much God of Tomorrow, but especially Messy Grace. And I think the reason why what you said is true is because our world today, especially in the North American culture, is defined by just numerous false dichotomies, where people don't think you have a voice unless you're an extremist on this side or that side. And yet we see Jesus coming, and Jesus doesn't take sides between grace and truth. He stands perfectly for both. And so when we live in that tension of grace and truth, we actually defeat the false dichotomies. We create a bridge between the two. That tension, it's strong. It can hold a lot of weight. It supports a lot. It defines boundaries, and it lets people move back and forth. It lets people who are believers, and it lets unbelievers and unchurched people and de-churched people be on the same playing field. So that's why I think this tension of grace and truth is so important, because it is so countercultural.
Yeah, it's, again, I'm not a big book endorser on the podcast, but I really do think this is a book that people should get and read or listen to it on Audible or whatever. It's a fantastic text, but that's really not what we're here to talk about today. What we want to do is kind of dive in on some practical help for folks that are listening in. Cause my sense is that, you know, if you're really leading in any community across the country, the LGBTQ issue is on your doorstep. It's a part of your church. Even if you're ignoring it, it's there. And so the question is, how can we help some people that today might be kind of wrestling with these issues? I wonder, there seems to be this area of service. People, you know, maybe we can come up with a scenario where, you know, maybe we have, a lesbian couple that's been in our church for a few years and they've loved it. Maybe somebody got baptized and they're really enjoying the ministry. Maybe they got plugged into a group and even that, you know, that experience was really great. They come to the place where they say, hey, I want to serve in the church, which is what we're hoping. That's what we say to people. Like, we want you to give back to the community and give back to others. But I know that there's a lot of people at that moment that feel a certain internal tension around what do we do at that moment. So I wonder if you could help us think through those issues. How do you think about those issues? And then how do you help other churches wrestle through that as they're thinking about, you know, helping folks serve in their church?
Absolutely. Well, first, I think that the pastor, the leader, whoever we're talking about, whether it's on staff or a ministry leader in charge of a ministry, we need to make sure that we're on board with Jesus's mission, which is to share his message and to lead people into a growing relationship with him. I think that's number one. We need to make sure that we're on the same page. I think number two, we need to understand that a lot of the boundaries that we have within church as we see it today were not necessarily the boundaries that existed in the first century. I'm going to give you an example. We have a lack of intentionality today that they had in the first century. I heard a well-known radio preacher the other day. I was listening, and this individual said that the church is for Christians. And I just thought, that's absolute heresy. Church is not for Christians.
Right, yes.
The church is made up of Christians who equip and encourage one another to take the message out and share Jesus with unbelievers, unchurched people, for the glory of God. The church is for God. The church is not for us. And so that allows us to be intentional. If we're not guarding it for unbelievers or for believers, that allows us to be intentional about what we do. And so we see this intentionality, like in 1 Corinthians 14, where Paul talks about tongues. And we get so wrapped up in the conversation in tongues that we miss verses 16 and 17 and 23 and 24, especially verse 23, where in 1 Corinthians 14:23, Paul says, when the whole church gathers together and you start speaking in tongues and there's an unbelievers are in your midst, will they not think that you are out of your mind? And right there, the Apostle Paul is telling the Corinthian church to be intentional about what they do and what they don't do because of who is in their midst. And Paul is actually interested in keeping the unbelievers in their midst, not in separation, but in keeping them. And I think that if Paul had that same kind of intentionality when it came to the worship service, you know, the big show and everything, I think even more so he had that intentionality with other areas within church life, especially in the first century. And so I think that we got to understand that this intentionality to not assume and to actually say, okay, we're actually going to think about who's here and who's not. I think that's biblical. And I think that we've got to include people who are in same-sex relationships, people who relate some way as LGBTQ, maybe people who are confused, maybe people who are celibate out of their convictions, but they are attracted to people of the same biological sex. And so that's the second thing. We just need to have that intentionality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. I'm going to play the devil's advocate and push back a little bit. So, you know, we're talking specifically around the LGBTQ issue, and this does, there are church leaders where this, we seem to treat this issue different than others, right? For some reason, our churches and this church historically, even the kind of, you know, evangelical, whether you call it that, or the, you know, even the fundamental kind of end of the church has been okay with saying, hey, I want to help people regardless of where they've come from. Hey, we'll make our church available for AA. We'll make our church available for, you know, our actual physical building available for that. Or, you know, lots of other issues. But for some reason, this particular issue seems to get people, you know, get their knickers in a knot for some reason. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think two reasons. Number one, and I love the phrase knickers in a knot. That's awesome. I'm going to start saying that. I've never heard it.
That's my dad. That stuff comes out of me, you know, so every once in a while. It's like I hear my dad, and that's one of the things he used to say.
Well, I'm going to bring it down here to the lower 48.
Nice.
But I mean, I think a couple of reasons why people get their knickers in a knot. I think number one, you know, there are some people who, you know, they're just afraid. Leaders are afraid. They don't want to sacrifice credibility with their peers. They want to avoid damaging the ministry. They don't want to hurt people, you know, that kind of a thing. So I think they get upset about that. I think another reason is that this is a hot button issue in North American culture and pretty much almost every culture, every society, everywhere. But I would have a question for people that really get upset. Here's my question. Are you more interested in being an influencer or a gatekeeper?
That's good.
Which one are you more interested in? And of course, people are going to say, no, we need gatekeepers and everything. Okay, well, first of all, nobody's saying that. And that should be the role of your elder team or your executive team or whoever to guard the mission, the values, you know, be the guardrails of the organization. But my thing is that some of the times we act like gatekeepers when we need to be influencers and we're not dealing with an enemy presence that is coming to attack. We are dealing with a person who is sexually broken like we are sexually broken, a person who is broken in general like we are, a person that Jesus died for, that God created, that was made in God's image. And so we need to be careful that we are not gatekeeping when it comes to people. Now, there are some people that are toxic, but the average person that you and I are talking about right now, that's not who we're talking about. They don't need a gatekeeper. They need an influencer. And I think that we need to give ourselves permission to see the value of influence. And in order to have influence, we need to make investments. In order to make investments, we have to create belonging. And that gets back to the serving piece you asked about.
Yeah, and there's a lot we could talk about there. I feel like there's a whole conversation around alignment. I feel like this has been one of those issues where you know, I have found most kind of level-headed leaders who, even if they come at it with a like, oh, I'm not so sure about that, after we sit down and have a conversation, the conversation that you and I are having, actually come to the point where like, oh yeah, of course, like I may be feeling something that's more out of fear than that necessarily is comes from the Lord. And of course, I want to be the kind of church where people, you know, come regardless of who they are. We want our church, you know, so many churches say we want to be for the community. Well, what that means is there's going to be four people who don't look like you and I, and have made different kinds of churches, different kind of choices. And we want our church to be that, you know, and I think we see pretty clear evidence of, you know, people following Jesus for all kinds of reasons, all different kinds of reasons. Everybody didn't come with pure motives. And so that sometimes happens even in our midst. But why don't we just, so I feel like there's a whole conversation we could have around alignment, but we'll leave that for another day. What about, okay, so let's say the church is aligned. Let's say we're like, yes, we kind of understand that, but we feel like, oh man, we need to have some sort of gate around people's, you know, sexual behavior, or maybe it's even sexual preference. We can talk about that. You may want to nuance those two things for serving in our church. How do you help churches? How would you help a church think about that, or how do you help about that issue?
Well, first of all, I think the issue is not mainly about, and I think you would agree, not mainly about same-sex intimacy or anything else. The main issue is, what do you believe about the marriage covenant? Because when Jesus was asked about divorce, he immediately quoted Genesis 1:27 and 2:24. And people back in those days didn't have chapters or verses. They would immediately think about the chapters or the verses above and below the ones that Jesus quoted and the other words in that verse that he didn't even mention. And so I think that was a callback to the marriage covenant. The Pharisees were trying to trap him into a question on divorce, and they were unprepared for how seriously Jesus took the marriage covenant. And so I try to get churches to say, okay, here's where you need to start. You know, Do you believe that God designed sexual intimacy to be expressed in marriage, a marriage covenant between a man and a woman? If you believe that, then anything outside of that box is going to have some boundaries. It doesn't necessarily mean they get shut out. I mean, we're not talking about church discipline in this way, but people who are coming, people who are interested, people who want to be a part of it, because nobody is going to primarily identify with the church community instead of another community if they don't feel safe, and we've got to offer that belonging. And so there have to be places in the church where anybody can serve, even if they don't believe in Jesus. I mean, I just believe that. And it's got to be more than just the tech booth,
right?
Or the parking lot ministry.
Yes. It's
like, you know, if you're kind of a little bit messy, you're out in the parking lot, you know, because those people need Jesus. But you know, you're kind of out there on your own. And it's kind of like, no, I mean, some people love that,
yes,
but most people don't. And so I think that we have really got to create a system that helps us, you know, figure out where people can serve, how to have difficult conversations. And I think there are five things that we need to do. Number one, the system needs to guard the integrity of everyone involved, the church, the volunteers who are currently volunteering, and the potential volunteer. Number two, it needs to provide clarity. When we talk with people, we need to tell them, you know, in one-on-ones, why we believe what we believe, and that, you know, this is what the options are. Number three, it needs to depersonalize and focus on disagreement of belief. In other words, you don't go to someone and say, well, you can't serve here because, you know, you're married to somebody of the same gender, or you're gay, or something like that. That's a personal attack, and nobody deserves that. But saying something like, you know what, you and I mean, you have your set of theological beliefs. This is what our church believes. We don't want to put you in a position where you would have to compromise your ethics or what you believe, or the relationship that you're in. Number four, the system, it needs to affirm other areas of their life. You know, so you're not just, it's not just a downer. You know, when you have a conversation with someone, you say, listen, you have really good character. You do what you say you're going to do. You are who you are all the time. You have great chemistry. People love your personality. You get the culture and the DNA of our church. You understand what it takes to do this. But for this area, we just need 100% alignment on theological convictions. And there are a lot of other people. The disagree in other areas of theology as well. And then the fifth one is, I think that this system needs to redirect and help the individual to engage elsewhere in the church where they can serve, because there's something about serving that turns people into owners. So I think those five things are important.
All right. That's fantastic. I love that. I think you provided a really good overview there. Let's put some skin on those bones. Which is another thing my dad would say. Do you have an example of maybe a conversation, a church, and I don't want you to reveal names and all that, but you know, maybe a conversation that you've been engaged in, or maybe you've helped another church be engaged in, how that actually goes? Because I think that could come across a little bit of like, well, that sounds easy, but it's actually, then you try to live that out with people. And you know, it obviously that's where things can get a little bit more complicated.
Absolutely. There are a lot of people, a lot of examples of different churches where people come and who are in same-sex relationships, or maybe they're in between, or maybe they're questioning, and they normally wouldn't go to church, but something drew them to this church, and they want to start serving, and they do, and they meet other people in the church who are volunteering there. And all of a sudden, they may or may not be in a community group or a small group, but they definitely have community within the area that they're volunteering. They start building relationships. They start getting to know people. They start getting to know the staff member or the team member or the volunteer that's over that area. And they have community. And people best find and follow Jesus in the midst of community, not isolation. Mm-hmm. And I think that serving really engages them. They feel like all of a sudden they're owners. And when you feel like you're an owner of something and people start talking about just values and the pursuit of God and really what spiritual character and sacrifice and holiness looks like, I think then the conversation becomes really, really different than if somebody is not serving. Maybe they went to a couple of small group sessions, they've been attending a little bit, but then they get told no, and they don't get a chance to serve, they're going to be gone. And that's why so many people don't come back. And I think that there is life change that could happen, life change with Jesus. Because here's the thing, if we're not intentional like this, Rich, the consequences are severe. And there's one church in particular, I think about it, that the consequences they had to pay for not being intentional was, I think, catastrophic to the church.
Mm. And why was that? Because just relationally, just things fell apart? Or what? Why is that? Pull that apart a little bit more.
Okay, so there's a church I was working with, and they had a policy that, you know, the staff and volunteers are supposed to follow when it came to family ministries, which they grouped student ministry, children's ministry, preschool, all underneath family ministries. And when it came to volunteers, they had this policy, except some of the volunteers or staff, they were not following it as well as they should have. And so they had two women who volunteered to be elementary age small group leaders. And they said, yeah. About 6 months into these two women serving, they found out that they were actually married. Mm. And, you know, when I hear about this, you know, for the first time, I immediately thought, okay, where was the disconnect? Where you didn't see that on the application? Like who is,
right.
who is
somebody was asleep
providing that with excellence? Yes, big time. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine if they were not intentional about that, they probably weren't intentional about the conversation they had to have with the two women, which they weren't. And in so many words, they told them, you can't serve because you're gay. We're sorry. It's our fault. And they didn't put it as bluntly as that, but pretty close.
That's probably how it was received, right?
Oh, big time. And some of the times you can say all the right things, but it really depends on how the person feels right. when they leave. And so they obviously, surprise, leave the church. Right. But when they leave the church, the kids in the small group that they were leading, they were really hurt.
Yeah.
And then their parents found out about it. And some of the parents who agreed with the church's convictions still felt like the church handled it poorly. They left the church.
Yeah.
And then some of the volunteers they were serving with, they ended up leaving the church. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, hey, I don't agree with the church's theology, or at the same time over here, you treated them poorly. And then gossip started bleeding through the rest of the church, and then it started bleeding into the community, because there are people that love and care about these women that don't even go to the church, but they're in the community. And so now this church, that is really a good church, they've had a lot of people leave And they're starting to grow a little bit again, but it all went back to this unintentionality. And for a long time, they were known as the anti-gay church, when nothing could be further from the truth. So the consequences of not being intentional are huge.
Well, and I think there are the churches that I've seen that have struggled with this. There does seem to be like there's something that happens at that moment of conversation, like actually navigating that interaction. Like in this case, the interaction with these two women, you know, when you sit across the table, that requires a level of delicacy. Like you've got to really be delicate as you go through that process and do it well. That, you know, I've often wondered, you know, it's like, it's a little bit of like, you know, pray to the Lord, Lord, give me wisdom in the midst of these conversations, because I, you know, there's a lot at stake here. And so I, you know, I wonder if you have any advice for people who hopefully don't find themselves in that scenario. I guess the first piece of advice is be clearer up front. But you know, if you find yourselves having to have a bit of a delicate conversation, and there's a lot, we could have three podcast episodes just on that, but what would be some of those you know, kind of pieces of advice you would give to a church leader who might find themselves in, you know, a dicey conversation around, you're right, not necessarily LGBTQ issues, but maybe sexuality issues in general as they're engaging with someone?
I would say a few things to keep in mind. Number one, you need to keep in mind that however empathetic you think you are, you need to be even more so. So whatever level of empathy you think you have, multiply that by five, and that's how empathetic you need to be. Because when it comes to individuals like the two women in the scenario that I just gave you, that we had to deal with, they were used to being rejected. They took a chance on going to this church. Yeah. These are women who had to face a lot of rejection in life, and the church didn't know this. Not too many people knew them, but they had been hurt by a lot of men in their life.
Right.
And then to have males tell them that, hey, you can't serve here because you're gay, that just another man that's hurting them. Right. And so I think that you've got to be ultra empathetic. And I think you got to make sure that there are people in your organization who are getting to know the volunteers, because you can, if you want to be a good leader, to some degree, you've got to be empathetic, and you can never be empathetic from a distance.
Oh, that's good.
You've got to be empathetic up close. So, I mean, I think that's a huge part of what needs to happen there. I think another thing that we need to understand when it comes to conversations on sexuality, and Dr. Mark Yarhouse, who's at Regent University, soon to be at, he's going to move to Wheaton College in Chicago. He talks about this three-tier kind of issue, that there's a big difference between identity, orientation, and attraction. And so there are some people that may use the word, the label gay or lesbian, but they're not even sexually intimate. Like at one of the churches that I was at, we had two ladies who were attending there. And these two ladies were not married, but they identify themselves as lesbians. They had been living together for 30 years. They lived in the same house, slept in separate bedrooms, and they hadn't been sexually intimate in years. And so the less assumptions that we make, the more chance we have to have an audience, okay? And the more questions we ask and to hear their story, the more that they're going to reveal their stories. Because as you well know, and you're a big fan of questions, the questions bring down people's guard. Questions make people process in a way that they weren't expecting. Questions really reveal a lot. So I think questions, empathy, all that is important.
Yeah. Years ago, I had a friend of mine who I consider so much wiser than me in pastoral care stuff than me, said, you know, the most, and I was asking him this, I'm like, hey, how can I get better at this? How, give me some handles. And he said, you know, one of the things he's found the most helpful, and I've used this time and time again, is the question that begins with the simple phrase, help me understand. So it's like, hey, help me understand, you know, what's going on in your world. Help me understand, you know, about, you know, what's, you know, and you're positioning yourself as I'm trying to learn from you, rather than like, I'm trying to accuse you. I'm trying to come at you with, you know, some accusatory tone. Again, a question maybe in a little bit of a different direction, but in the same area, I think, and you mentioned this earlier, you talked about clarity. And I think this is one of those areas, if I'm just completely honest, just being transparent with you for a moment, Caleb, like I, so, you know, there's that old Groucho Marx saying, right? I wouldn't be a part of a club that would have me as a member, right? You know, like, and the reality of it is, like, we are all in need of Jesus to change our lives. You know, we're all in need of an encounter with Christ to radically change who we are. People don't have their lives all sorted out before they come. In fact, we don't want it that way. We want people who are, you know, who are looking to have their lives changed. There seems to be a broader movement around clarity in the kind of LGBTQ, you know, or there's a segment of the LGBTQ community that is pushing for clarity and would, it's almost like they're looking for churches to declare like we're anti-gay or something like that in a kind of a crazy way, which strikes me in a strange way. And again, I don't know if this makes sense, but it's like, yes, everyone who comes to our church, by definition, we're saying we would love you to change and grow. And I would say the same about myself, right? I don't, my sexuality needs to be submitted to the teaching of Christ. Like I need to ask him as a heterosexual male, I need to say, hey, Lord, I need you to inform this area of my life. Like I need you to inform power dynamics and the way I use money and, you know, how I, you know, if I have a drink on a Thursday night, you know, what, how all that fits together. What do you think, how can churches be more clear specifically around the LGBTQ issue, and where is there a line where we actually cross, you know, into some sort of jeopardy land where that clarity actually could be more repulsive to people rather than inclusive? Does that question make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And the whole movement that is forcing clarity is really adding to the whole false dichotomies, because their whole point is they believe that if people go there and they relate somehow as LGBTQ and they find out that churches believe this about sexual intimacy and about relationships and marriage, then that's just going to be triggering and they're going to become suicidal and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people who don't experience that, but I think they are far more in the minority. And usually people that have those experiences, there are other really significant issues going on in their life that would lead them to go down that path so quickly. But I really think that this whole movement on clarity is just adding more to the false dichotomies that we talked about at the beginning of the episode. And so I do believe that churches should have clarity. But here's a question. Who defines, number one, what clarity is and when clarity is imparted? And is clarity imparted all at once, or is clarity imparted over a series of times? And then what is the best platform for clarity? Mm-hmm. I mean, it almost feels like this movement wants you to put it on your website and wants you to, you know, have a poster in your lobby and a pamphlet, all the things I would tell a church not to do. And that's not because I don't want a church to be clear. It's because I don't want obstacles where there could be opportunities. Mm-hmm. I want churches to be strategic. I mean, Paul was strategic like that. That's why he spent a lot of time. He was preaching to the Athenian philosophers differently than he did the Jewish people in Jerusalem or Festus, right, or Agrippa, because mm-hmm. there are two different audiences. And we need to have that intentionality. And so I do think the churches need to be clear. Okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean that clarity has to come from the platform. If the church decides that they want that, that's up to them. But nobody should force a church to say, this is how you do it. I think that usually that clarity comes well in one-on-one conversations. And I don't think that's a bait and switch. I think you can even have something written down on a ministry covenant that you have people look at if they want to volunteer somewhere. And you just have information on the ministry covenant saying, hey, our theological conviction is that sexual intimacy is designed by God to be expressed in marriage between a man and a woman. If this is something that you do not agree with or describes a relationship that you have with someone in your life, please come and discuss it with us. Mm-hmm. We really want to hear your story. Mm-hmm. Something like that. Mm-hmm. I think that provides clarity. But there's a difference between smacking somebody over the face with a board mm-hmm. and being clear. Does that make sense?
It does. I think there is – to me, it's going to be interesting to see how that movement kind of shakes out in the coming years, because I do feel like there's it's at the crux of what we're trying to do here. You know, it is a – we are trying to be like I would say as a leader within a – you know, senior leader within a church. I've sat at all kinds of tables. I'm like, I'm not sure I really should be at church. Like, I think I need the message of Christ to invade my life and to change me. And so I struggle with, you know, kind of this, like you say, this kind of like forced clarity that, I just don't know that it's helpful in the long run.
No outside person outside of the church should define who does and does not go to your church.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to be honest, there have been a number of those, you know, folks that, you know, when they've had this kind of like outing experience where, you know, I've said to folks, I'm like, listen, you need to actually talk to people in the church. Like, just because it's, you know, there's someone externally makes some sort of, kind of declaration about the church, that doesn't mean that is the people's experience who are attending the church. The shorthand of that, and I'll, you know, try not to out the individual church I'm talking about that I've worked for in the past when I've had people push on this issue, you know, in a loving, caring way with friends who people I'm friends with. I've said, you know, because they'll say, well, what about, there'll be us, a church of, you know, at that point, a few thousand, and then a church of, you know, this other church around the corner. And, I would say, listen, on this one issue, you know, we have a ton of people who are, you know, would consider themselves LGBTQ. We're being clear on this issue. We're not trying to hide this issue. You can look, we've taught on it, we've written on it, it's there, but they continue to journey with us, which I think is great, because together we're pushing forward on what does it mean to follow Christ. And in the same way, I want to listen to my LGBTQ friends and brothers and sisters and say, hey, help me understand how Christ is at work in your life. And that doesn't scare me. I know there are folks that scares, like that, you know, freaks out. But I think that's what we're called to do. I think we're called to, regardless of people's orientation at all, where we should be pursuing what is it that God is doing in your life and help me understand how, you know, that impacts me. So now,
absolutely. It goes back to the grace and truth and the tension that allows everybody to walk on the strong bridge, the grace and truth built. It goes back to, you know, the scenario in 1 Corinthians 14, where Paul says, hey, you need to make room for people unlike you in the actual worship service. So I agree 100%.
Yeah. And I know there's a movement within the broader church that I think is trying to force, it's actually not coming at it from, say, that angle. They're forcing the clarity issue the other way, saying like, we're going to be like, we're the black and white. We're not going to, you know, we're going to be super clear or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not sure it's actually that clear. Like, I think what the reality of it is, obviously there's clear biblical mandates around sexuality. I'm not saying that's not clear, but how that works out is difficult. The fact that Paul in the New Testament was saying, you know, like, you probably shouldn't sleep with your mom. You should not do that. Tells me that the way the message was being portrayed locally, the grace was so lavish. This idea of following Christ was so lavish that then he was having to come back and re-clarify, okay, well, let's actually work that out in your life. Let's actually talk about that in your specific area, which I think we're still called to as Christian leaders today, that we're still called to say, okay, let's actually talk about what that means for you in your church, in your life today. So pivoting in a totally different direction. So you're not a totally different direction, related direction. So you've actually now are running an organization called the Messy Grace Group. What do you do at the Messy Grace Group? I today we've kind of talked about these issues, but what are the kind of services and that you're providing for churches?
Yeah, I do consulting with churches and ministries and colleges, seminary schools, Christian organizations, but especially with churches. To help churches design systems and processes by leveraging grace and truth, mm-hmm. that will allow LGBTQ people to belong, engage, attend, but at the same time will also honor the integrity of the church's doctrine and values. Mm-hmm. And so I basically try to help people develop systems that lets them live in that tension of grace and truth. And that, I mean, that's what I do. And I speak as well, and we'll do seminars and classes and do coaching with leaders and so on and so forth, individual coaching. So that's what we do.
So I'm sure there's, you know, leaders that are listening in today. Maybe you're an executive pastor at a church, and you're thinking, man, maybe we need to have somebody, you know, help us think through our policies and our approaches around these LGBTQ issues specifically. That's the kind of thing you could help with, right? Like, hey, help us kind of take your existing documentation. Let's talk through that. Let's, you know, let's think about how this actually works out in real life. Is that the sort of, that's, I know there's a lot you could do, but that's one of the things you could help with churches with, right?
100%. I can do that, and I do a lot of that. I do a lot of walking alongside churches and church teams for like a month, 3 months, or 6 months. And I'm starting this new thing where, you know, we can talk, and I'll come and spend a day, day and a half, or 2 days with the team there, whoever needs to be in that meeting, usually the executive team or staff team or whatever. And when I leave, that team will have about a 20-page strategic document that will kind of outline, based on their context, based on their beliefs, what they should, how they should communicate about this within the church, outside the church, how they should think about volunteers, where they set boundaries, how do they have difficult conversations without destroying, so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I would encourage people to, you know, reach out, and we'll link all the connections and all that. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I would encourage people to reach out. I'm assuming also there may be churches that are in a bit of a crisis situation. I know I receive these phone calls where it's like, we stepped in it. Like we did something and, you know, I'm not sure what to do next. You know, the thing I like about you as an individual, you're just a caring person. I think you've got a huge heart for people. And, you know, I'm assuming that those kind of phone calls, you'd be open to having that conversation like, oh, I think we did something wrong. We need to figure out how to, you know, obviously that's not the kind of call you want to be getting. We want to be working proactively. But I'm sure if churches are stuck in a situation at this point, you'd be willing to at least jump on the phone with them.
100%. And I do that a lot. And usually what ends up happening is I usually end up going out there and meeting with the church, if even for a day or a weekend or something. And there are so many different issues that churches are finding themselves stuck in. Like, for instance, here's one. This one church had many issues, but in particular, they had two married lesbian couples with young kids that they had adopted from the foster system start attending their church, working, you know, volunteering different areas, attending service Wednesday night. And then they went to some of the staff and said, we now believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, but we're married. What should we do?
And that's why they call you.
That's why they call me.
No, it's true. And I know one of the things, you know, been in ministry since the mid 90s and have been in, you know, I've been in some great churches that, you know, we've had an opportunity to really interact with a lot of unchurched people. And this kind of scenario, I know there's people who are listening in who are like, I can't believe that actually happens. You know, we can tell story after story of those kinds of interactions, which to me, I'm like, praise God, this is why we got into this thing. We got into this thing to see life change take place. And you know, when you do that, you know, to steal the phrase from a friend's book, it's messy. You know, it's, you end up in these conversations that then we've got to apply a tremendous amount of grace in and try to figure out where to go from. So Caleb, I've appreciated being on the show today. Is there anything else you want to share before we wrap up?
Yeah. If you want to get a hold of me, go to messygracegroup.org, messygracegroup.org. And you can learn more about what's going on, and then you can fill out the form and contact me there. And I also want to say that I appreciate Rich Birch's haircut.
True, we both have the same barber. Nice. Thanks so much, Caleb. I really appreciate being on the show today. Again, that's messygracegroup.org. I would love for you to go check that out, get connected over there. You should at least be tracking along with Caleb and following him on all the various social media and all that. He, you know, I think is an incredible voice for a lot of different issues in the church, but, you know, has, I think, a unique, because of his unique story and it's just his experience, God's used him in this area. So I'd encourage you to be following along with him. Thanks so much, Caleb. Appreciate being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.